Welcome to the Montreal Bias. That's right, no recency bias today, no need for it. What happened on Saturday night at the Bell Center required two people to really break it all down. So we're going big show. Myself, Zach Vanoss, Sean O'Neill joining me. What's up, buddy?
What's up, buddy? I'm pull the curtain back a little bit. We were trying to decide when to do this show. And we were basically saying, you know, should we do it before the game or after the game? Because, you know, clearly I'm not going to do both. I'm not that committed.
No.
We decided to do it after, and it's probably a good thing that we did.
Which was also an audible kind of called in the final hour before where we realized, wait a second, is there anything stupider than recording a podcast that possibly becomes irrelevant 5 minutes after we put it up? So that's what,
yeah.
We don't have any producers. It's just you and I.
It only took us 5 years to figure that out.
And I'm not saying we'll have learned it for next time, but this time out, we knew to wait until after, so we're recording this on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. I've been watching the Olympics all morning, all weekend. I'm heavy in Olympics. The only thing that could have actually brought my attention back to the Montreal Canadiens for a minute there was the return of one Alexi Yemelin to the Bell Center. Let's talk about it. The big guy's back.
I was more prepared to talk about the Yannick Weber return, but I guess I could talk about Yemelin for a couple of
minutes. No, Weber's been back quite a few times. I feel like, you know, he's dating Carey Price's sister. There's a natural connection there. We could bring that up whenever. But Yemelin, it's very rare.
It is. We always thought he'd be coming back in a Vegas uniform, but he's a Nashville instead.
That's what we always thought.
We always thought from the moment he signed.
Someday, this kid will come back to us in a Vegas uniform. No, obviously PK Subban back for trip number two to the Bell Center. Have Subban and Weber played each other yet? I haven't done any research. I feel like one of them's missing every time they have.
Maybe the first game last year back in Nashville, but even then.
No, because PK was out in that one, and Weber was out. I don't remember. Maybe Weber played in the Montreal one.
There might have been one. Maybe that first Montreal game, but yeah. Yeah.
A lot of research. Once again, we have no producers. We have no research team.
It would be nice if they could both play a full, if not 82 games, at least both play like 75 games in the same season.
Because then Subban would have a natural rival in the game. In this one, nobody seems upset with PK. Record scratch. Before we get into Brendan Gallagher, I want to say, I thought, you know, there is all this talk about PK Subban coming back. I know half of the fan base is really annoyed by it. Half of the fan base won't stop talking about it. We'll get into that later, too, as well. But mostly what I was thinking was, this is fun or horrible, however you see it every time PK Subban returns and we bring the conversation up again. But either way, we're not going to learn anything new. You know, there's no new evolution in this story. PK will come back. He'll probably say some things. There'll have to be a 15-minute segment on him on Sportsnet. He'll probably give a couple quiet shots to the Montreal Canadiens, which happened, and he did. But really, nothing new will evolve from that. We won't get any information that we didn't have previously. Maybe just a slight new jab here or there. But no, instead, yeah. A whole new chapter opens up, the Brendan Gallagher chapter of, so turns out it might not have been Max Pack, or maybe Max Pacioretty still didn't, but Brendan Gallagher, definitely not a PK Subban fan.
Not a fan, and you kind of noticed a little bit last game that Gallagher was really taking some runs at PK, and,
but I mean,
you didn't know if that was just the way he plays, because that's kind of how he always plays, or if there was something a little more personal there. But yeah, it is funny, after 19 months of all of us assuming that the big split in the locker room was PK and Patches, which I think was still a thing, but I think it was PK and Patches, and it was also PK and Gallagher, because obviously there's not a whole lot of love lost between those two.
A lot of fun, though.
A lot of fun. It was super fun.
It was a great, I mean, most fun game of the season. Definitely seemed to be the only game that had any weight to it that they've played in a long time. Not that it actually mattered, but you know, you felt like the Habs cared. The Habs showed up to play who I think is the first or second best team in the NHL, outplay them. It's only the fact that the Nashville Predators are immensely more talented than the Habs that they won. And the fact that Pekka actually outdueled Carey Price in this one.
Yeah.
It was a great game. And Brendan Gallagher and PK Subban going toe-to-toe. I mean, Gallagher won the game in terms of, if we're talking about the individual efforts, Gallagher with a goal in which he embarrassed PK Subban. Some good chirping. Subban actually didn't play the greatest game. I think the highlight
he
is...
He had a bad game. He had a really bad game.
His best moment of the game was just holding the puck for about 45 seconds, continually circling behind his own net while the crowd both booed and cheered louder and louder. A very PK moment.
Yeah, PK did not have a good game. Gallagher actually had quite a good game. But then obviously everything was sort of immediately overshadowed by the comments after the game, which, you know, in some ways were, you know, a lot of us found disappointing only in the sense that we're big PK fans and we're big Gallagher fans and, you know, we don't like seeing mommy and daddy fighting, but it was kind of fun too. Like, I wish hockey had more of this stuff.
I love it too.
I think it's really fun.
It just adds,
you know, another layer for the next 5 years.
Well, because if the rift was the traditional rift that we've been putting out there of Pacioretty v. Subban, that's boring. Why? Because Max Pacioretty's boring. Brendan Gallagher's not boring. And Brendan Gallagher has now dropped what was obviously known in hockey circles, because Elliot Friedman, after the game, tweeted, I guess, the cat's out of the bag, or whatever it is that he tweeted along
Something like that.
Basically being like, this isn't a secret anymore, that if there was a rift, it was actually probably more Brendan Gallagher and PK Subban led. Which shows how little we know. Nobody.
Well, I'm not sure
this.
It's either or, frankly.
That's true. But I mean, the Gallagher thing, okay, then in that case, it's kind of unfair that Max Pacioretty's had it all put on him when there's probably plenty of other guys. and not secondary guys. Brendan Gallagher is a major leader on that team. He's going to be one of those voices in the room. So, you know, yes, Pacioretty's the captain, yada, yada, yada. So there's going to be more that should be put on his shoulders, but I don't know. I mean, I'm taking it from the standpoint that we have especially come hard on at Max Pacioretty on this podcast, you in particular, over the years. And now, more interesting, not only is it not a boring individual like Max Pacioretty, who's maybe part of this, but one of our favorites, like number two to PK Subban, Brendan Gallagher. It's more interesting. It's more fun. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. I wish there was more of this stuff in hockey. I mean, Pacioretty's an easy foil. I never, even before all this went down, Pacioretty was never my favorite player on the team just because he was kind of boring. You know, Gallagher and PK were my two favorite guys on the team. So, yeah, in a way, if you're dreaming up a scenario, you wish your two favorite players were best buds, but it's almost kind of more fun that they deep down hate each other.
And for me, I don't know about you, for me, this gives me my first step into almost like permission to start eating up the PK Subban back in Montreal for rivalry purposes. You know what I mean? But Brendan Gallagher allows it to be positioned now in a way where I'm like, okay, screw you, PK, even though I'm going to love PK Subban forever. Like, it gives me an entry point to maybe actually having some animosity there.
Yeah, fair enough. You're assuming Gallagher's still on the team in 3 weeks, which I think he will be. But
Brendan Gallagher's not going anywhere. They traded PK Subban for him.
Fair enough.
That's my new spin. I love it. The game was great.
One of the best games in a while.
After game fireworks were fun. Overall, the season though remains in a boring spot. I don't know what we look forward to next now that, you know, PK Subban's return is off the calendar. What you got next for the Canadiens is games against, try not to get too excited this week, late night games against the Colorado Avalanche, the Arizona Coyotes, and the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Sweet Golden Knights.
Yeah, Sweet Golden Knights next Saturday in Vegas. But I mean, you know, a real letdown after our wait for PK's return. It doesn't get much more exciting into March. The only thing we're all talking about now, obviously, trade deadline time. So we'll get into that. We'll talk about what we've been talking about on the forum on rabbithabs.com. Before that, though, one thing I quickly want to get to, and this jumps right into the trade deadline, is another thing dropped on Saturday night by Elliot Friedman. Montreal Canadiens might be considering re-signing Thomas Plekanec unacceptable. That is insane.
Yeah, that, I mean, even if you think this team, you know, let's just say you think this season is a fluke.
Which they do.
The team can be back in contention with some relatively minor tweaks.
Definitely what they think.
I don't personally think that, but let's say you're operating under that assumption. Even if that's the case, this season's lost. You know, this team needs some help, and having an aging third line center who will still bring something back, who can still play a role in a contender, if you don't deal him, that's just complete abjugation of your duties.
And I think it was Brian Wilde who said, if you re-sign Thomas Buchanan, that's a signal that you see him as a second-line defenseman, second-line forward center still. And if that's your thinking
which
right
is
now,
insane which is
exactly, that's the, yeah, that's what Wilde was getting at. Was like, that's ridiculous, because you have your second center in Phil Deneau. You know, your third guy is potentially Thomas Plekanec going forward.
I think Deneau's a three, but yeah.
He's your second right now, though.
Right
I agree
now, yeah.
He's
for
a three.
For a cup contender, he's a three.
Yeah. I mean, we need a second before we get a first. You know, we're a long ways away. But either way, it represents your thinking's all fucked up. And the other thing is, like, sure, trade him and sign him back if you see value in
exactly.
Thomas Plekanec. Like, this is what the New York Rangers are talking about with Rick Nash, who's probably a more sought-after commodity, I'm just guessing, than Thomas Plekanec is at this point. Like, if you want to do the handshake, wink, nudge, we're going to trade you to wherever the hell, St. Louis or some shit that you end up going, and then come on back after spending your playoff run over there, fine. But to re-sign him and not get anything, unless the market is we can't get anything for him. There's nobody willing to even give like a third-round draft pick for him.
I would take, even if you get a fourth or a fifth, there's no excuse.
There's no excuse. You don't need, he's doing, I mean, other than you don't have really an actual center if you trade him, I suppose. But who cares?
Who cares?
We're here to lose. Yeah. Maybe.
It's a lost season. He's a, what, 34-year-old number three center with very little offensive upside.
34 by age, 38 by years on the old engine, I feel. And yeah, as we saw on Saturday night, as we see every night, there's no offensive upside. The old Thomas Plekanec half slapper is a joke now. I mean, Twitter, every time Plekanec does the shot, you just see several accounts being like, ooh, watch out, Plex with the old half slap into the chest.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to bring Markov back for 2 years, but you're going to re-sign Plekanec halfway through a season where you've got the fifth worst record in the league.
And I mean, I've got ready to go for the moment that we do trade Plex. I've got the, we never appreciated this guy. What a legend. What a great Hab. Tip of the hat. A post ready to go on him. I completely appreciate sure. The history of Thomas Plekanec with the Canadiens, but he's entirely useless to us now. And only valuable on a team that wants to make a deep run and needs a very deep roster. You're obviously in a rebuild. No excuse. As the more fiery than ever Brian Wilde said the other in when he was basically going off on this, he called it horse shit, and I got to agree. It would be complete horse shit to keep Thomas Plekanec around. To keep most of these guys around. But if you don't trade Plekanec, that's the most obvious and easy one.
Exactly. I know. That's the thing. Like, there are some... You know, there are some names on there that are tough, and you have to, you know, they're tough decisions that you have to make, and you have to, the return, it depends on the return and all that type of stuff. This isn't a tough one. This is GMing 101.
Yeah. It very worrisome if they re-sign him. You're looking at, I mean, they're not going to re-sign him. Like, I'm not worried that his contract is going to be insane. I'm not worried about it being problematic going forward. We've already gone through the era of Thomas Plekanec being way overpaid. And that may be why they're thinking of just bringing him back, because the offer is just nothing, because that contract's too big for anybody to take for a guy who's going to be your third line center at best, I think. But like you said, take a fourth for him, take anything, unless there's literally nothing, in which case you can also probably just let him hit free agency sure. And then bring him back. Like, I don't understand.
I can't. I mean, I just spent the last 5 minutes kind of dumping on him, but I can't imagine there's no market out there for him. He's still very good defensively, and on the
he's
right team,
great.
He'll win you some faceoffs, and he'll play some tough minutes as your number three or your number four.
He's really
and
good
for a team
on
like
side.
Pittsburgh that's trying to go for a third straight cup but is a little weak down the middle, like, they'll probably give up a second or a third for that, I would think.
The rumor on Pittsburgh is they do think the contract's too rich for their blood. But, I mean, that's right now because they have maybe other plans in the minutes up to the deadline, and they want to be able to be a little versatile, be able to move, keep a little cap space if possible for those last-minute moves. Somebody's going to offer you something for Pukanich in the final 10 minutes.
And you don't want to go too crazy on this, but if you've got $9 million in cap space, you can eat a bit of it as well.
Yes, that's what. That's another thing you need
retain,
to be
retain
doing.
A bit of his salary if it means the difference between getting a fourth and a third or whatever. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You've handcuffed yourselves by not spending to the cap. At least take advantage of it now.
Because you're going to be paying it if you re-sign him anyway. So clearly, it's part of your plan in a way. And that's another thing we got to talk about, because it has sort of. It's sort of been lost, I think, in the major conversation about the Habs as we headed towards this trade deadline, because they were so bad. You know, early in the season, all that cap space represented kind of the missing pieces that might have turned this team into a playoff contender or what have you. Now, though, now that the season's completely lost and there's all that space, people kind of forgot about it in a way because, well, it's not even as if adding $6, $7, $8 million of a player would do anything. But you can't have put yourself in a position to have had all that space and now not take advantage of it. Because once again, all that space, plus the fact that the Canadians still have a ton of money, there's no worry about, oh, just because we have a bad team, we're not making enough cash. Use it. Take on the bad contracts around the league that are, you know, as long as somebody attaches a second or a third draft pick to them. Take every expiring contract that the good teams want to get rid of so that they can load up in these final minutes. Make yourself a complete accessory to every other move that's made. Use it. Who cares what you do with these final 3 months of the team? Who cares if it's, you know, some just a bunch of random ass players, maybe some who don't even, you know, don't even wind up suiting up for you. Just take advantage of the fact that you're got a lost season with an immense amount of cap space. If you can't do anything with that right now, it'd be very troubling. I mean, these last few years have been troubling, but I can't imagine the Habs just standing pat or moving, even if it's only moving Plekanec and another piece and bringing nothing back, taking on no heavy contracts, you know, just kind of standing still will be very frustrating.
Yeah, I think the real rebuilding process begins, you know, now, essentially at the trade deadline.
Yes.
With the exception of Pacioretty, I don't think the rebuilding process begins in the sense of getting top-end prospects back. Mm-hmm. I think it's more getting draft picks back and setting yourself up financially to maybe take a run at someone or to maybe make a trade for someone with a big ticket. But I don't really think you're going to do that this March. I think you clear out some of the dead weight and, like you said, bring in some guys who've, you know, position yourself for the future, essentially, is what I'm saying.
There's one spot. I was listening to the 31 Thoughts podcast, which we are kind of just we're like the pump up guy for the 31 Thoughts podcast, apparently, at this point.
Yeah, because they need our help.
Hey, maybe that's where it all started when Merrick showed up on the Montreal Bias that one time, even though he had his own podcast. For some reason, that made people think. They were talking about what got me thinking about a decent landing spot for Max Pacioretty would be Nashville. They have young talent. They have prospects they're willing to get rid of because they see an opportunity right now. They need a left winger. That's what they're in. That's what they're hunting for. Pacioretty's cheap price plus the year after would be very nice for them. I think you could probably get a lot out of the Nashville Predators when it comes to picks and prospects for Max Pacioretty. And make them incredibly dangerous. Well, maybe upsetting PK Subban. Depends on how much is true about their rift.
Yeah, I mean, that you really would have to run it by both of them, I think, and say, all right, how much truth was there to all of this? Are you guys going to be able to work together? If he does go to Nashville, I think that's sort of the final nail in the coffin of the narrative that these two guys didn't like each other.
That'd be funny.
It'd be interesting. I mean, if you're Nashville, you're obviously going all in right now.
Yes.
It's a great team, and they've got, you know, somehow it's a great team that still has a ton of pieces they can move to get even better.
Yeah, it's unfair.
Which tells you what an amazing job Poyle has done. That's one name you hear thrown out there. Calgary's the other one. They've got some nice young players, and they're sort of right in the mix of the playoffs as well. So, you know, there's some guys on that Flames roster I wouldn't mind seeing coming back to Montreal in exchange for Pacioretty. St. Louis chatter seems to have died down a little bit.
Yeah, that was definitely the hot spot for a while, at least as far as the rumor mill was concerned. I don't know how much there was really there, but that was the original landing spot, much like everyone had Plekanec going to Pittsburgh for a little. But both of those have cooled now, so you never know. I mean, as conversations heat up between now and what is the deadline, the 26th, I think we'll hear a lot more rumors. I just don't want to hear anything more from Elliot Friedman on re-signing Thomas Plekanec.
That would be so, so bizarre.
On the last,
I'm not putting it past him because it's the type of move this front office would make, but it makes no sense.
That would make absolutely no sense at all. Speaking of movement, give me a second to dig this up here, but I sent you a text as we were watching on Saturday night, watching Gallagher and PK Subban go head-to-head. And I got thinking, you know, as much as we were talking about moves to be made, had we simply not had Marc Bergevin, or Marc Bergevin decided not to do anything over the last 2 years, let's say, this is what the Habs decor could potentially look like right now. It could be. This is essentially doing nothing besides talking to Andrei Markov and agreeing to bring him back, which seemed like a pretty easy thing to have accomplished. You could have Subban, Emelin, Petri Markov, Sergachev, Mete as your six main defenders right now, instead of Ben and company, as we're looking at here.
So two things. I think you said this a couple weeks ago, but, you know, obviously the PK trade was sort of the turning point in Bergevin's tenure, but I think the moment where a lot of people really realized that this is going in an ugly direction and he's out of his element was the Altner deal.
You
take a look at the guys that could be on this team and you compare that to the fact that he handed out a 5-year, you know, $20 plus million contract to Carl Alsner, a guy who was the number six defenseman on the Washington Capitals in their playoff run last year.
And a healthy scratch.
And who clearly, it's not even that he doesn't have anything left in the tank. It's just clear that his game doesn't translate well to the way hockey's being played in 2018. Like, that is just a sign of a front office that is operating under assumptions that are no longer valid in this era.
Yeah.
Like, this team does not understand where the NHL is headed, or that they're willfully ignorant about it.
It's crazy. I'm not the first person to say it. It's probably not even the first time we've talked about it on this show, but it's crazy how the difficulty that Marc Bergevin seems to have assessing his own position. Or maybe that's the issue. As a 6, 7, 8 defenseman, he's overvalued those guys way too much. He's actually not bad when it comes to forwards. You look at, you know, bringing in Deneau and a draft pick for, you know, the spare parts that was Dale Weiss. Not a ton of other great examples, but, he hasn't really found us a great center either. But it does seem like where he's really managed to put this team in a bad spot is on that blue line, and it's because of having faith in guys like Alsner and Ben and Schlemko and just the I can't even remember the laundry list of 6, 7, 8 guys we've now had come through, where had you just literally done nothing besides wait till Andrei Markov was a free agent at 38 years old and said, hey, you want to come back 2 more years, this price, we're fine against the cap because I haven't done anything else stupid. You don't overreact and trade PK Subban, and then you've got Petri, and you've still got Subban. Maybe Ben goes instead of Emelin at the expansion draft. And look, I'm an Emelin. I was one of the main people driving Emelin to the airport when the opportunity came. I'm not here to pretend like I have give a lot of value to what Alexi Emelin brings to the table necessarily. But he was what he was. It's fine. He would be the weakness, really. He'd be the point. He'd still be the guy I'm bitching about on a Mete, Sergachev, Subban, Petri, etc. decor.
Yeah.
And that one also has a future to it. We're not staring at a window that's closed if you've got PK Subban and Sergachev and Mete. Sure, you don't have Drouin up front, but Drouin,
we can live without his 8 goals, frankly.
At this moment, Drouin's looking like a disaster trade as well. So, Maybe once he's in his real position, he'll bounce back. I haven't written Drouin off yet, but this is, I mean, if there's a season you didn't want to see from the guy you traded for Sergachev, it's this from Drouin.
Yeah, I know. You know, I think there was a time where Bergevin would have been a good GM and this would have been a good roster. Like, you know, 2003, this is the type of roster you could have built for a deep run at the Cup.
Yeah.
It's not 2003 anymore.
Well, that was 15 years ago.
Like, to me, this is just, you know, this is a very sort of, you know, defense first, clutch and grab, depth guy, sort of boring defensive style hockey, which, you know, there's no speed, there's no talent, there's no creativity, and the league is headed towards youth and speed and talent and creativity. And, you know, going back to Therrien, this front office and this team has had some weird bias against guys who bring that to the table. And you know, they favor size and they favor grit and they favor all these sort of intangible things that it's not working. It's obviously not working, and that's not where the league is headed. Look at who the good teams in the league are. That's not the blueprint anymore. We don't need to, we're not competing against the 2011 Bruins anymore.
No, we're not. We just have their coach.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's talk about the future. It's the one shining light we have at the moment. Not the brightest shining light, but it is something that it's all we got in these dark times. So let's talk about Sherbak, Lehkonen, Mete, Hudon. That's what we've got to watch right now. Not horrible. I mean, I've been happy with what I've seen from them so far. Sherbak especially. You know, we repeat this over and over again. You and I are not guys who pay attention to the junior levels almost at all. So until these guys show up, I've got the Twitter reports. You know, you're kind of average. You'll hear mention of who's in the pipeline, but I don't pay much attention to it. And I don't, A, because I don't care to, and B, because a lot of the time I can't tell what the hell's going on, and most people can't till these guys actually get to the NHL. But now we've got Sherbak in the NHL. Now we've got Hudon in the NHL. Lehkonen in his second year, coming back from finally an injury, seems to have healed, and he's a new version of himself. And then Victor Mete, the surprise on the blue line. It's not horrific what you've got there. You pair that with the fact that, a little reminder, and I feel like everyone just remembered yesterday that Alex Galchenyuk's only 23, and they realized he was only 23 when he was skating with other young guys who were kind of his same age, except they're just now breaking into the NHL. You know, you've got P.K. Subban's big enemy, Brendan Gallagher, who's just 25 years old. So there's enough young guys that it's not all doom and gloom.
He's only 25. It seems like he's been around forever.
He has been. I mean, he's been in the league since he was 19-20. Him and Galchenyuk broke in at the same time when they were our young guns. So it's not all is lost. There's pieces there. It's not as if it's completely empty, though it's from my point of view anyways, it's not behind these guys. I don't really know what there is. But there's something, and there's been flashes of good stuff. Lehkonen, who I was starting to lose some faith in until these last couple weeks, he's shown some flashes. As I say, Sherbak, he looks like he could be something. Mete, I think, is going to turn into a nice 3 or 4 guy, not your Markov replacement. That was Sergachev. And Hudon could really be something if he can figure out how to put the puck in the net with some regularity, because he is a magnet for that thing. His size, I've said this before, so I'm repeating myself, his size isn't the issue that I thought it might be. He clearly can hold his own in terms of getting himself some space and holding on to the puck. Just converting still seems to be a challenge for him. We'll see if he figures that out. But it's not nothing going on in the future right now.
There's not nothing. But with the exception of Galchenyuk, every team has these guys, right?
Yes.
Like I'm like you in the sense that I don't pay super close attention to the prospect pool. So I'm not hyper qualified to talk about this. But when you do, if you get outside of sort of a Montreal bubble, because Habs, like every team, I guess, really has a tendency to overrate their own guys. Yeah. When you look at the Hockey News rankings of teams' prospect pools, or like other outside guys who rank team prospect pools, Montreal still comes in around like 20th, if not lower.
Yeah.
And that's partially the result of drafting. You know, they make the playoffs more often than not in recent memory, so they're not drafting in the top 5 or top 10 consistently. So it's not necessarily pinning this on the front office or the scouting department, but this notion that the cavalry is about to arrive and there's just this wave of young guns, like, I'm not really sure I buy that. There's some guys, the guys you mentioned are NHL caliber players, and there's some stuff there, but I don't know. I don't think the next great wave of Habs players is on the way. I think, you know, we had that wave with Pacioretty and Price and Subban and Gallagher, which is really the cornerstone of a team that should have contended for a Stanley Cup. I don't see that with whoever's on the way.
No, and I agree.
But maybe that changes if this team is picking third or fourth in the draft coming up. Mm-hmm.
There's something.
Because sometimes it really does just take that one guy to sort of put you over the edge. But
yeah, like Toronto. I mean, those guys, Nylander, Marner, that was all good and better than Sherbak, Lekin, and Hudon. Don't get me wrong. But without Austin Matthews, the Toronto Maple Leafs are still trying to figure out that next step. But you've got to have the guys in place around. And, you know, I think what Montreal has here is the shape of the next generation of the team with some massive holes in it. But, you know, you get yourself out from under the big contracts and you can fill in those holes. I mean, to go back to Nashville once more, instead of the team du jour, they've got great centers now. They didn't draft a single one of them. It was intelligent roster management and kind of its smart trades that put them in a position to fill the middle with what they needed to have down the middle.
Which, by the way, all we've heard for the past 5 years is that you can't trade for a center.
Yeah, well, they've managed to turn themselves into the powerhouse by doing exactly that. My point is, as long as you've got some pieces, you don't just build your team through the draft. You're also going to need to make some smart trades, or make some big free agent signings. Maybe that's where you put yourself in a position to take that next step. You get a good draft pick. You know, Montreal hopefully will have the first overall pick this year. Likely a top five pick, it seems. But first overall, the odds are not against us more than any other team, really, at this point. That's kind of swimming near the bottom. So you got to turn. You can't ruin those. You know, it starts as soon as this draft and with this another high draft pick that the Habs have coming to them. It starts right there. That's your next big piece. We're hoping it was going to be Alex Galchenyuk. I mean, if Galchenyuk had turned into the center we wanted him to be, all this is probably it's a whole different ball game. Which is why we've all been so obsessed with that point for the last 6 years. But
yeah, and the question is still, and I don't know if we'll ever get an answer to this, at least while I'm not always in Montreal. Like, the question is still, is that on the front office and the coaching staff, or is he, you know, is he a good player but not a great player? And it's probably a little bit of both.
I think it's a little bit of both. I do think. I mean, you saw last night, there were moments where Alex Galchenyuk looked insane. Like, his capabilities from time to time are incredible. He's only 23. Let's all remember that once more. Keeping in mind, you know, I know Kyle Turris is almost the number two, number three center in Nashville now. But, I mean, Carl Turris, there's a guy that there are a lot of questions about for a long time. He's figured it out now that he's into a little bit later in his career. I'm far from giving up on Alex Galchenyuk. I've probably been closer to giving up on Alex Galchenyuk in the past. But right now, at this moment, I've walked anything back on, let's keep this guy. There's so much still there. Claude Julien, I think, can really work with him. Let's not assume Brad Marchand was a model pupil. And Claude Julien managed to really turn him into something, and I don't think he had the talent that Alex Galchenyuk has in any way, shape, or form. I still think it would be selling too early on 23-year-old Alex Galchenyuk right now.
Oh yeah, I'm with you. I think he's very talented. He's not, you know, some years you will get an absolute franchise-changing talent at number three. He's not that.
He still might be the best player in that draft.
Yeah, that was a bad draft.
It was a bad draft. Bad one at number three.
And that's, you know, some of it's just luck. It's kind of bad luck that the 1 year the Habs had the number three pick that, you know, it could have been one of those historic drafts, and instead you get a guy like Galchenyuk, who's very, very good, but maybe not a franchise centerpiece. But I'm with you. Unless he's the centerpiece for a package to bring back someone who is a legit superstar, I'm not trading Galchenyuk. And that's not going to happen. If they trade Galchenyuk, we all know it's going to be for 66 cents on the dollar.
Another rumor that rolled out this weekend related to Montreal was Alex Galchenyuk. Apparently, he was shopped aggressively and offered to every team in the offseason. Not shocking
that's,
either.
We don't know, but that seems super accurate, doesn't it?
Yeah, I could have probably
guessed
that. It
seems like they were shopping him. It seems like they couldn't find what they were looking for, so they kind of let out a big sigh and signed him to that bridge contract. And it seems like something, you know, Bergevin is not afraid to make a big move, obviously. Like, as much as I've shit on him for the $9 million in cap space, which I still think is ridiculous, it seems like he had something up his sleeve and it fell through and then he was left scrambling.
Yep, I think that's very fair. I think, yeah, there was a move that we'll never know about, most likely, or maybe some way.
Probably Duchesne, but...
Yeah, poof. How's that working out? So Ottawa turned the franchise around? Based on the gifs of Carlson I saw from Saturday night, no, they have not. Where's he going?
Yeah, that's Nashville.
No, they can't. Jesus.
Imagine. That's my answer for everything.
We now have four Norris Trophy-worthy defensemen here. Thanks. Like, is Pekka even good? I don't know.
Yeah, you don't need to be.
Don't need to be. That's stupid what they... I'm frustrated. They've done exactly what you need. An incredible blue line and really solid down the middle. Everything else will work.
There's
if
no
you do
real
those
weakness
two things.
On that team. Like,
but I mean, are the wingers that good in Nashville? Because you're going to look real good when your blue line has nothing but puck moving defensemen, and your centers are Johansson and Turris and company. Like, you've got all the pieces.
That's
you
fair,
need.
But in a cap league, you're not gonna be the 80s Oilers. Like, you're not gonna have all stars at every position.
No, I know.
They're about as close to. You know, so maybe those wingers aren't putting up those type of numbers on a different team, but the way they've put everything together, it all kind of fits.
Yep. That's both. I mean, having watched them and Montreal kind of outplaying them on Saturday night, but all the attention I paid a lot of attention to Nashville this season, as well as Tampa Bay, because it's fun to watch really well constructed rosters play that type of hockey. And it,
yeah.
And, you know, and then watching Montreal all the time, it hurts to see just how well they're put together and how almost in the opposite mold the Canadians have been built. And that's the one thing that Toronto's going to need to figure out is where they're going to get that blue line, I think. As much as talented as those forwards are, they've got some good young guys on the blue line, but if I think anyway, I could be wrong, but I think if they want to compete, they're going to still need that stud on the blue line. Even though Pittsburgh did manage to do it without, you know, really an incredible defense core last season, maybe more
that's
the fact
an outlier,
that
though, I think.
Yeah, I don't. And you know, that's when you have Malkin and Crosby as your centers, which nobody's ever going to put two centers like that together again for a long, long time. So, I think Toronto Maple Leafs should probably trade for Shea Weber, but that's just me. There's no.
You know, Nashville did the thing, and it was smart. Where. And, you know, Nashville did it the right way. Edmonton did not do it the right way, where Nashville just kind of stocked up on dudes. And they kind of just took the best player available. And, you know, we don't care if we have 37 defensemen in the system because we'll flip them for forwards or, you know, we'll just do next man up if we lose the Ryan Suter or whatever. Like, just – and now I know that Poile's been the GM for 26 years, and that helps a lot. But really to watch the way it's all come together the last two seasons has been incredible. I do think some degree of continuity would be helpful.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I generally believe in patience when it comes to front offices because I think that, you know, doing the Cleveland Browns thing and blowing it up every three seasons is a recipe for disaster.
You don't think bringing in baseball guys was a good idea for the Cleveland Browns?
I do think that was a good idea, actually. I think they just gave up on it too quickly.
That's actually true. I agree with you.
I don't think Bergevin has earned the benefit of the doubt. I think that the franchise is trending in such a clearly bad direction that they need to make a change. But I would not be opposed to making Timmins the new GM because I do think that continuity would be helpful.
Do you think there's any merit to the argument I made in the forum on Rabbit Habs the other day? We may have been asked, there's something to be said, just giving him the reins for a decade and letting him learn from his mistakes. Letting him figure shit out, letting him evolve with the league, maybe get ahead of the curve at some point. You know, 5 years, I'm thinking about the current position I'm in my career. And 4 years at this job, I'm only now starting to feel a full understanding and the ability to kind of do my best at it. Should that not be kind of the same for general managers? And I go back to David Poile, who is the main topic on this podcast. He's been there since day one with Nashville. He was there a decade with Washington beforehand. His team got out of the first round on just two occasions in nearly four decades, but now he's built a juggernaut. Maybe this is what we need, and then maybe that's why Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, nobody can get themselves a Stanley Cup in Canada. The New York Rangers can't get themselves a Stanley Cup because there's just not enough patience. Although the Rangers are a bad example because Seider's been in charge forever there. Anyway, that's just a thought. Maybe we leave Bergevin in the position and let him learn it. I don't know. Preferably not, though, probably. I mean...
I was saying, like, every situation is different, right? Bergevin is, and it's been kind of a city era ever since.
That's true. That's true. All right, that's a down point. Let's light up Colorado style and finish this one in a positive space, my friend. What have you got?
What I got is that two hockey players showed personality last night.
On personality. I mean, he always wants to make it about
him. I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, I like the trash talk. I like the rivalries. Let's bring it on. It was super fun.
Yeah, and I'll always
so
be...
So much more fun than the mumbling of cliches between intermission.
For sure. I'll always be on PK Subban's side, but the fact that Brendan Gallagher is letting me get in there and create some animosity and take a side... And who can, I mean, it was fun Saturday night. Whether or not you were, as they've been titled, the Subanistas, who were actively cheering for PK to beat Montreal last night, it was an entertaining game. You know, they're in a once again a season that hasn't given us much. Saturday was a lot of fun, and thanks to PK Subban and Brendan Gallagher for bringing it and for adding another chapter in what I thought was beating a dead horse. That horse still had some kicks in it.
When does this not become a story?
Oof. Never.
Yeah.
I mean, in the way Patrick Roy's remains a story, or whatever, when are we going to stop talking about it?
Yeah, I guess it's a better way to...
At the end of this Subban contract, maybe?
Maybe.
It's not... Look, I know it pisses people off. I know people are very sick of it, and in a way, you're right to be. Shea Weber is a good player that we should be happy to have, and yada, 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 move on. But it's just not, it's not how people work. That's not how this is going to work. If you're sick of the Subban thing 2 years after the deal on just his second visit back, I got bad news for you. It's not going to go anywhere, whether you wanted to or not. Just think Patrick Roy coming back as the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche was still a deal. It's not going anywhere, people. It's just not. Subban is too much of a character for it to go away. It was too much of a massive deal at a crucial time. It's not going anywhere. Whether you like it or not, the Subban conversation is here to stay. If you want to be a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, you're going to have to accept that as just part of the landscape. That's the reality. I know.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, if Nashville had gotten knocked out in the first round last year and both teams kind of sucked, like maybe then it kind of dies down a little bit. But especially with Nashville making the Cup final, looking like a favorite to go back this year, PK might win the Norris this year. Like, this ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, nor should it. I don't know what you're interested in sports for if you want this to go away.
Fair enough.
This is the fun. These are the narratives. Even when it hurts your team, you got to accept it. I think it's fun, and that's why I'm excited about the Brendan Gallagher chapter being added to it. We've now got more to do with what I thought, as I say, with what seemed like a dead horse that we were beating anyway. There's more to it.
I got nothing. That's a good way to end it.
That's how we always end it when you're out of things to say. All right. Thanks for
my defense. That's a reasonable way to end a podcast.
It completely is. It absolutely is. I would just keep talking, especially when we're doing it on a morning when I'm just drinking coffee. I could just keep going, but no, that seems like a good spot to end it. We'll be back. My guess would be, unless something huge happens before the trade deadline and we feel the need to jump on and talk about it, maybe we'll do that. But I suspect post-trade deadline will be the next one of these that we get out there. Hey, and maybe the Montreal Canadiens will do it Cleveland Cavaliers style. Blow that shit up. That'd be fun. We shall see. Until next, you can find him on Twitter antagonizing Grant McCagg at The O'Neill Factor. You can find me at Zach. I can't even say my name. At Zach Drops Tweets. at the Montreal Bias for this podcast feed, of course, and at Rabbit Habs for the website. There'll be another edition of the forum up. I imagine we'll be talking about Brendan Gallagher and PK Subban this week. Sound good to you, Sean?
Yeah, I would say so.
All right, let's move. If you still haven't got enough of that, we've got more of it for you coming in your way. We're just 2 weeks away from the trade deadline now. Hopefully we don't hear about Thomas Plekanec re-signing anytime between now and then. You'll find me on the Recency Bias after they go up against the Colorado Avalanche at 9:30 on Wednesday night. Ugh. On your final parting words.
Go fuck yourself, Brendan.
Bye.